Penguin Random House Audio presents Break the Cycle, A Guide to Healing Intergenerational Trauma. Read for you by Dr. Marielle Bouquet. For my sister, Lady, thank you for modeling for me how to break cycles with love at the center. May we continue to live out our intergenerational legacy. I love you, Mas. Sensitivity Acknowledgement. In this book, I have done my very best to offer as much inclusion to diverse experiences as is within my realm of knowledge. I aim to be as responsive and actionable in my language and approach as I am able. Any text will have limitations, but I hope that you will feel seen and validated through listening to this book. If any part of your experience doesn't hold true in what I have reflected here, I hope you can take what you can from this book and attend to the pieces that do offer you healing. A note about professional emotional help. Contacting a professional, like a psychotherapist, to help walk you through your emotions is sometimes necessary when working through intergenerational trauma. This is especially so if you feel you could use the help in processing any trauma. If working with a therapist is of interest or accessible to you, it's a good rule of thumb to do any healing work that is centered on trauma with a licensed professional who is trauma trained and trauma responsive. If you or someone you love is undergoing a cycle of abuse and is looking for help, there are some resources that can be helpful. Calling local crisis teams if someone's life is in danger. The International List of Sexual and Domestic Violence Agencies, hotpeachpages.net. Introduction. My grandmother, my mother, and I all grew up in poverty. My grandmother lived almost all her life in the tiny town of Barahona, Dominican Republic, DR. I remember at the age of 10 walking over a mile with her to collect 5 gallons of water from a small spring because neither her home nor her village had running water, a basic necessity that so many of us take for granted. With her petite 4-foot-5-inch frame, my grandmother carried those 5 gallons all the way back to her tiny home, holding my hand while steadily balancing the heavy bucket on her head, preserving every drop of the water she had collected for her family. It's an image that I can never erase from my mind, because it was both jarring and humbling to see just how little she had and yet how resourceful she could be. She would salvage not only every drop of water, but also every bit of food, the very last of the toiletries she could afford, and every last item of clothing. She understood that this level of preservation was necessary for survival. She had to live in survival mode her entire life. But despite it, she held on to so much resilience. Because of my grandmother, I learned about the great value of preserving not only water, but every small thing that we owned. Nothing could go to waste. Because of her, I also learned how capable of mental strength and joy I too could be. My mother, who migrated to the United States at the age of 40 with her 2 young daughters, has held on to that spirit of preservation her entire life. My mother has always been a keeper. She keeps everything, sometimes for decades, even if it is no longer functional. We lived in a low-income community in Newark, New Jersey for most of my life. But my mother always saw us having so much because her childhood, back in Barahona, had taught her what it was like to have next to nothing. So, whenever we grew out of our clothes, or an appliance broke, or there were household items we were no longer using, they wouldn't get thrown away. Instead, they would be packed away neatly in a box, and years later, when we'd have enough money to send these things to our family, they would be shipped to the DR. Over the years, boxes containing decades of saved items piled up in our home. But gradually, I learned that what was truly being preserved in those boxes wasn't worn clothing or a broken toaster. It was my mother's fear of being left with nothing. This comes from a scarcity mindset, driven by true scarcity in her childhood, which became embedded as a fear of not being able to survive and the guilt of not being able to help her family do the same. I now live a comfortable life, as does my mom, but I've often found myself holding on to things that I don't need, the same way she did. I have lived with that same fear and guilt. If I were to throw items away rather than donating them or sending them to the DR, I would be riddled with guilt. If I didn't use something to the last drop, I would find my inner self nudging me, whispering to me that I was being wasteful and that I might need it, just in case, someday, I'm left with nothing. Even though I have always had running water in my home, I still lived with my grandmother's fear that someday the water would run out. I held on to that same panic. My family's fear had been transferred onto me, and in some strange way, I have felt a deep loyalty to them when I carefully preserve things. In doing so, I felt I was honoring them. It took a long time to realize that my loyalty came at a psychological cost. Fortunately, because I have been able to break the cycle of what I have come to understand is intergenerational trauma, I have been able to shake off the guilt and fear almost entirely. And I want other people who are suffering to be able to do the same, to shake off their loyalty to pain and transition to a place of emotional freedom. In order to do that, however, those suffering must first recognize and heal through the intergenerational ties that they have to their own family's lineage of pain. It is not easy, but it is possible. And the abundance that can come from this healing is beautiful and worth the effort. But how did I come to identify this pain as intergenerational trauma? And what is intergenerational trauma exactly? It all started during my years in the Adult Outpatient Psychiatry Clinic of Columbia University's Irving Medical Center, where I received my doctoral training. I was with a client, and the session, well, it was rough. Very few things in this world are as frustrating to a mental health clinician than reaching what feels like a dead end in a session. And that's exactly where my client and I had arrived. It was a moment in which we had to sit with the suffocating sense of helplessness that filled the room. I felt I had nothing else to offer my client because my training, as robust as it was, hadn't prepared me for what was happening in this moment. I suddenly understood the reason for the fog. My client was the bearer of intergenerational guilt, sadness, grief, depression, anxiety, and the list goes on and on. We weren't just working through my client's pain. We were working on the emotional burdens of my client's family and ancestors, people who weren't even in the room with us during session, and perhaps who weren't even alive anymore. This was a major therapeutic challenge. No traditional training in Western psychology has adequately prepared any of us mental health clinicians to treat patients for intergenerational trauma. There is no guidebook for when clients come to us with the emotional wounds of an entire lineage of family members. I felt the weight of the generations that came into that therapy session with my client. At that point in our therapeutic journey, the only way to cut through that thick fog was to face the generations of pain we were dealing with. And as hard as it was, I knew we had to deepen the work. The realizations that came from this session changed me forever. I thought about generational healing every day from that moment on. I thought about how a person could carry traumas that weren't experienced in their lifetime. I wondered about how trauma could be transmittable from one person to another. I grew curious about the different ways in which
Sample complete. Ready to continue?